Hey, joining me on the phone now is independent Fingal County Councillor Cian O'Callaghan. Good afternoon, Cian.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Cian, this pool bag incinerator, I mean, lots of people were concentrating on things like, you know, the water charges is out there, it's in front of everybody that's seen it all the time. You know, we've got the HSE getting a bit of a kicking now this week and last week and everything else. But this pool bag incinerator thing, it's an ongoing project, and it's kind of still there, and it's sucking in a whole load of money. I think the last I heard, there was already 96 million or something had gone into the pool bag incinerator, and not a brick had been laid or whatever. But It's still very much in the consciousness of the councils. Can you explain to us why the councils are still very much have the pool bag incinerator in their consciousness?
Well, I suppose in a way the starting point is that a number of years ago waste management was taken away from councillors as a function and was put in the hands of the county managers.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, waste management and the incinerator project isn't accountable to local communities or local councillors, and there's no kind of democratic input into it. So that was the government giving a way or a process where the incinerator could be imposed on people in Dublin, whether or not they wanted it or not. So that was the starting point. And then since then, the county managers and the city manager decided to go ahead with it. So it was the four Dublin local authorities decided to do this. And since then, the project has gone. There's been huge budget overruns, cost overruns. And I think this is part of the problem of removing democratic accountability from, you know, public projects as there's now, because the city managers can do this, county managers can do this without recourse to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real accountability on the expenditure for the project. So, for example, they paid €52 million for the site at Pool Beg, which is now only worth a fraction of that cost. They spent about four times the amount on consultants than they originally budgeted for. And mm-hmm. they spent some €22 million on costs associated with relocating businesses close to the site to other locations when they'd only budgeted for about half that amount. So the project has been subject to this massive overspend to date already.
Yeah.
There's no real kind of democratic accountability for that, because councillors aren't able to stop the project from happening. And then I suppose from my own point of view, kind of most worryingly, is that Fingal County Council now is putting aside additional money for further budget overruns for the incinerator project, which to me makes no sense, especially given the problems with expenditure there have been on the project to date. So I think it's unfortunately a very, you know, striking example of what happens when you have public projects and public expenditure without any kind of democratic control or proper oversight over the spending.
So just to, you know, to be very clear, what basically the situation is now in Fingal, as you're saying, is this project is already massively overrun, as we say, somewhere in the regions of 100+ million already. And Fingal County Council have taken the decision to actually put by more millions in case it overruns more. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So Fingal is liable for about 20% of the costs of the, mm-hmm. the project. And Fingal is drawing down a loan which will provide an additional €7 million over and above any of the costs that the council is projected to have to meet for the incinerator project. So that means that Fingal is effectively planning for a further €35 million overspend on the project. And this is all our money as, you know, as citizens in Dublin that's getting spent in this, whether we like it or not, I suppose, because as I said, there's no kind of democratic accountability with the project. It isn't a decision of councillors or communities as to whether or not it goes ahead.
Yeah.
And I suppose there is a wider problem with the incinerator project in that it will only make money or balance off when it's up and running if there's a very large amount of waste to be fed into
it.
And from an environmental point of view, there's no incentive then to try and reduce the amount of waste because, in fact, the four Dublin councils are reliant on there being a heavy amount of waste to feed this incinerator. Otherwise, they're going to lose further millions when it's up and running.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, outside of the cost that's been sucked into this incinerator project, there's already been millions and millions spent on re-educating the public and everyone in the country in how we actually get rid of air waste. You know, we've got three different bins now. We recycle this, we separate that, with blah, blah, so on and so forth. So, you know, would the incinerator then, if and when it does get built and it's operation, as you say, have the opposite effect then of everybody saying, ah, sure, it's all getting burned anyway, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, it creates an economic incentive for the councils to encourage, ironically, more waste to be produced.
Yeah.
And they, as a key business partner in this, the worst thing that could happen for the councils financially is if there was a massive reduction in waste produced in Dublin and surrounding areas.
Yeah.
But then the councils lose millions. So it's a very kind of perverse outcome or incentive. And you know, it shows you devolve waste management to the heads of the local authorities, and this is what you end up with. So it's not, you know, it's the opposite direction, arguably, I think, than we should be going in. And as you said, if you look at recycling and composting and that, you know, there's been huge strides made in Dublin over the last number of years, and it's really in that direction I think we should be going, rather than a business model or a financial model that only makes sense if we continue to produce a large amount of waste.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a bit cynical myself, and I keep getting told I'm a victim of conspiracy theories sometimes. But just in my own head, I'm thinking here now, as you say, right, we plough all of this money into building this incinerator, then we're not producing enough refuse in Dublin and the surrounding area to make the incinerator viable financially. It's not working to the capacity it's being built to deal with. So then what do we go out then and do we start buying in rubbish from everywhere else to start, and then we create one of the biggest kind of refuse incinerators in maybe Europe, right on the east coast of Dublin, right on the east coast of the country, right in the part
of Dublin. Certainly the planning for the incinerator is that it's meant to be dealing with local waste, so it's not meant to be bringing in waste from, you know, further afield in Ireland, let alone any other countries. And that's very clear in the planning conditions. I think the problem is that there just simply be no incentive at a council level to try and reduce waste. So the most likely outcome is that, you know, there will be sufficient waste for it, but there'll be zero incentive, in fact, a counter incentive for the councils to try and encourage a reduction in waste. And I think that's a big problem. I mean, there's a second problem as well, which is obviously, you know, things with waste can change quite fast. So if you went back 20 years ago, it might have been hard to predict the kind of recycling rates that you have in place now. Because, you know, when everyone, you just had the one bin, it was a very, very different scenario. And these things can actually change quite fast. And you could, you know, it's not inconceivable, for example, the European Union in a number of years would actually develop a very progressive policy on waste and seek to reduce massively the kind of unnecessary, you know, packaging, you know, around food and other goods, and really reduce that down significantly. And let's say the European Union did that and brought in regulations to that effect, then we could have a situation where there simply isn't the waste to go into an incinerator like this, and in which case there's a massive financial hole that has to be, you know, met by everyone who's living in Dublin. So I don't think, you know, it's particularly forward-thinking in that sense. I think there's a question as well. I mean, you know, I think councils are there to provide, you know, basic services and to be getting involved in what this is effectively a you know, commercial venture with Covanta, a private incinerator company. And, I mean, it's arguable, why should councils be getting involved in those sorts of commercial ventures? Why should councils be making those sort of resources available for them when they're not able to make resources available for other things?
Exactly. And I mean, of course, then that ultimately leads to the question, as you say, is why have councillors at all if they're completely toothless and they have no say in issues like this?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I think we need to have basic local democracy restored, which that will mean that local communities, you know, get to have a say in these sorts of issues. And I mean, the point, I mean, this is the very point that, you know, if an incinerator made sense for Dublin,
Yeah.
Surely then it would be possible to get democratic support for it on a Dublin-wide basis. The fact that they don't have to make the case for it then means the level of scrutiny and accountability is extremely low, which then lends itself to a culture of these massive overspends. A lot of the overspending was done in consultant reports, and of course this is the pattern that everyone would now be familiar with. You know, you get in consultants, and what do they do but say, well, we need more expertise here, and you know, the bill just keeps on increasing, and they see it really as a soft, you know, soft money, being able to access public money like this. And you have to question as well, if these consultants were so great, how come with all their expertise that's been bought in, there's been such massive mistakes made in this project, such cost overruns, such money lost on the land acquisition, such money lost on relocating other businesses, and so forth. So it doesn't, you know, as your listeners will be well aware at this stage, you know, you're buying in this expensive advice from consultants, unfortunately, doesn't seem to lead to you know, prudent use of public money.
Yeah, it's becoming a very familiar story, unfortunately, Kane. You know, we're seeing it, obviously, of course, with the whole thing with water as well. Just, you know, with the incinerator itself, just for information, where is the incinerator in terms of the build, likely opening, when it's going to be up and running and everything else? How far along that road are we?
Well, what's been happening over the past 10 years or so was really the pre-planning on the project, and they went for planning permission, they acquired the site, they did all the hiring and the consultants, all this sort of stuff. The last piece of work they did in it was they were making the business case for it, and they got approval from central government to proceed with it. So it's at this stage that they're now looking at, you know, beginning construction on the project. So it's, as you said, you know, the site has been acquired, but no work has actually begun on constructing the incinerator. As far as I know, it will take a number of years for it to be constructed, so it's not, you know, wouldn't be too late at this stage. Although a lot of money's been wasted on it, wouldn't be too late at this stage, you know, for sense to be seen on this.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, quite soon it will be too late to go back on it. And certainly the heads of the local authorities are determined to go ahead, and that's the direction they've gotten from central government as well.
Yeah, so as you know, I mean, as you say, I mean, we're still a number of years from completion, even if they start building tomorrow, and this is the thing, as I'm saying, you say there in Fingal, they've already drawn down a loan to put by whatever amount of millions in case of more overrun. It could be, the case could be made then, because this project's nowhere near completion, the case could be made that this time next year, they could be drawing down more money to cover even further overruns. It just seems to be a bottomless pit of money after money after money.
Yeah, well, the extra money that Fingal's drawing down for this, I think, would provide for every possible opportunity of any budget overruns. But I think that's the very point, that it's almost encouraging over-expenditure.
Exactly.
If you're putting money aside for possible over-expenditures in the future.
Yeah.
It's the worst financial practice I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. I mean, it's a bit like if you were getting someone in to do a job.
Yeah.
In your house, and you agreed a price.
Yeah.
Then you said, but listen, I've been down to the bank and I've taken out €1,000 extra just in case.
Yeah.
You're going to charge me more. I mean, it's a nonsensical way to proceed. There's no level of accountability there, or of financial control.
Yeah.
And after everything that's happened in Ireland over the last number of years, it really beggars belief that this is an approach that local authority is taking.
Yeah. Just from, and you probably can't answer this question for me. Are the other councils, or have any of the other councils, as far as you know, taken a similar route, or no? Would you not have that information?
Yeah, I'm not sure what arrangements the other councils have put in place. Yeah, and I suppose the worrying thing about this financing arrangement that Fingal is doing is that it has approval from the Department of the Environment. You have to approve, what the council does in terms of drawing down loans. And I suppose, you know, the department's environment won't allow Fingal to put in finance like this for any other sort of a project, and there's other areas which would require funding.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the incinerator, not only can the council draw down a loan for it, they can draw down a loan to cover in excess of what it might cost. And that, in terms of the department's environment doing that, that needs to be questioned as well, in terms of why they're giving such great priority for this over and above everything else. I guess my general experience as a councillor would be that the council is doing well if it's able to meet the costs of a project. There's many things that are underfunded, and it's absolutely bizarre to be in a situation where this one thing, the incinerator project, is getting overfunded. It just doesn't make any sense at all as to why something would get such preferential financing treatment.
Yeah. Well, as I'm sure most of our listeners are aware, I mean, I'm sure in Fingal, as in this part of the city and everywhere else around the city in the country, I mean, for example, we've a huge shortage in social housing. We've people homeless, we've people living in sheltered accommodation and everything else. And for councils to be able to draw down money, not only to cover the cost, but to also draw down money to cover possible overruns. And then, you know, on the other hand, we don't have money to start building the amount of homes that we need. We don't have money to give them proper medical services, proper health. It does, as you say, beg a belief of what the priorities are here.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly the point. So, for the last number of years, all the councils have been barred from drawing down any loans to build social housing, even though there would be a sound financial case for doing so, because obviously if you draw down a loan and build or acquire social housing, you then get that money back over a number of years through your rental income. So it's a completely financially sound case. And in fact, because the council's own existing stock of housing, they have the assets with which, that would justify the drawing down of substantial amounts of finance for acquiring new social housing. So, the case is there, but they're not allowed to do it because it will go on to the government's debt and affect the government's debt-GDP ratio. But yet, when it comes to the incinerator, no problem. In fact, take more money just in case,
And as we unfortunately know, and you pointed out, I mean, if the money's there to be covering an overrun, you can be sure somebody will find a way to spend it.
Yeah,
or certainly get their hands on it.
Yeah, and particularly on a project where there's been such overruns to date.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was something that all the finances had been properly controlled from start to finish, there had been no budget overruns to date, it would be a slightly different scenario. I still think there'd be no case at all, really, for budgeting for further overruns, but it'd be, you'd be less concerned, I suppose, in a situation like this. But this, as a public expenditure project, seems to be one of the worst in the history of Dublin, anyway, in terms of cost overruns.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of anything else that's gone over like this before. So why the Department of the Environment is seems to be encouraging this sort of practice really needs to be asked. And I think they're, again, having waste management out of the hands of democratic accountability in local communities, and this doesn't help either. I think that's something that needs to be restored. So, because at the moment, effectively people can't vote out are in councillors over this, because it's not a function of councillors, and they don't get a say over who the county and city managers are, and there isn't any directly elected mayor or anything like this, so there isn't a recourse for people to hold people accountable on this. And if we had that, it mightn't solve it in its entirety, but I think it would at least be better.
Could I just ask though, Keenan, as you say, the councillors have no, this is just put before them and basically they have a vote on it. Is that correct?
Well, the councillors have no say whatsoever over the incinerator project, so it's not, there isn't a vote on whether or not the incinerator project goes ahead. So, councillors can give their view on it, but it's not, it doesn't have to be listened to. Now, the area where the councillors do have a function, though, is over council finances. So, for example, this loan in Fingal, I brought it up at the last council meeting and said that we shouldn't be taking down a loan for this over-provision and over-funding of the project. And there was a vote on that. And certainly if the councillors wanted to stop the council taking down extra finance for this project, they would have been able to do that. Now, unfortunately, the majority of councillors decided to go ahead with it. But because councillors do have an input on the finances of councils, they are able to put in some amount of financial control. What the councillors couldn't do is, you know, if you like, refuse to pay the bills that the council management have signed the council up to, because that would bankrupt the council. So councillors, you know, couldn't go that far because of the consequences it would have. But they do have some input,
Because I think it's important for people and anybody who may be listening to this and they think, you know, that's not on. How have they got away with doing this? You know, it's probably important to be aware that that there are a number of councillors who did actually endorse this. They have said, well, okay, fair enough, let's go ahead with that.
Yeah, so in Fingal, basically it was the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael Labour Party and a few of the independents voted en masse to go ahead with this, and then it was... centre-left independence and anti-austerity lines.
Sinn Féin
that voted against. So that's what happened.
The lines are firmly drawn now, aren't they?
Yeah.
The dividing lines are firmly drawn now. Well, Ken, you know, thanks for coming on and explaining so eloquently to us, because, you know, a lot of this stuff, as I said to you at the start, you know, the focus is very much over the last few months on water, and as I said, the last few weeks we've got stuff with the HSE, and you know, stuff like this is happening all the time, and people probably aren't necessarily hearing about it, and there's so many millions being put aside, as you say, not just to finish the project but also to cover any more overruns that might happen. It does beg our belief, really. It's a crazy situation.
Absolutely, yeah.
It is indeed. Cian, listen, thanks so much for talking to us this morning, and we'll watch with interest to see how it pans out over the coming weeks and months. And sure, if we don't get talking to you this before the festivities, we'll wish you a very happy Christmas, Cian, and thanks once again. Always a great contributor. It's always a great contributor to the programme. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a million.
All the best, Cian. Take care. Bye bye. There you go, folks. That's independent councillor Cian O'Callaghan from Fingal, and telling us all about the incinerator and the amount of money that's been poured into it. And when you hear that, you know, councils are passing not only the budget to cover whatever remaining costs are involved in getting the incinerator to the finished article, they're also now drawing down money and putting it aside to cover any more overruns on a project that's grossly over budget already. Just crazy in the times in this country that we're in, the amount of money that appears to get wasted in overruns and budgets and consultants fees and all kinds of that, and it really is crazy stuff. Okay, anyway, we'll pop on with some promos here, and when we come back we'll have some more music.
This is 90.2 Near FM.
If you're laughing on the outside and crying on the inside, tune into the God Talk program every Sunday from 4 to 4:30 p.m.
Did you know that you can listen to 90.3 Near FM and watch programmes from Near TV on the move? That's right. Your community media service is very mobile. Download one of the free radio apps and listen on your smartphone. Check out our podcast via iTunes and Android. And while you're on the move, watch Near TV programmes on YouTube and Vimeo. 90.3 Near FM. Near TV. A move in the right direction.
Bathrooms and kitchens are the busiest spaces in the home. They get a lot of wear and tear. If yours are looking a bit sad at the moment and in need of a Christmas makeover, get on down to the new Coolock Tile Outlet and talk to the experts. Top quality tiles, floors and accessories, all at best price, with professional fittings all part of the service. Experienced and helpful staff will help you make the right choice. Contact Sean at 01 847 3868, or drop on by to the shop itself down in Coolock Industrial Estate, next door to the window and door accessories, across the road from the old House of Tiles. The new Coolock Tile Outlet. It's the go-to place this Christmas.
Weekday mornings from 11. This is Northside Today.
And you're very welcome back to Northside Today with me, Mark Finnegan, sitting in for the Bertie boy, Noel McGuinness, this morning. We're going to crack on now with some more tunes. Now, this isn't a Christmas song as such, but I think it should have been and it could have been. We've already had a bit of Cliff, the king of the old Christmas songs, or Cliff, right? And we had Mistletoe Moyne and all of those other ones. But this one wasn't a Christmas song, but I think it would have been a brilliant. I think it would have been surefire number one Christmas song. I think it's brilliant. It's a song called Peace in Our Time, and it's from about, I think it was released back in the mid-90s or whatever. But I think it's a great song, and I think it would have guaranteed him another Christmas number one if he'd released it at Christmas. But have a listen, see what you think, and we'll talk to you after this.
When glory has faded, the dream is worth more than the price. A twist and turn and fled, and a freedom burning bright knows all of the names and all of the games of the yellow, black and white. We've gotta have faith to work it out, faith and hope. Without any doubt, give us strength to make us stop, put a song in our hearts. We're never gonna break down these walls and build a prison with a stone. 'Cause you and I know what love is worth. We're gonna build a heaven on earth. We're running in the wheels of fortune, turning water into wine. We're gonna take love and make it shine. We're gonna find peace in our time.
There you go. That's Peace in Our Time by Cliff. And as I say, I think that should have been a Christmas single. I think it would have been a guaranteed number one from at the time. I think it's a brilliant tune. Okay, if you have any requests or dedications you'd like us to play for you in the last 15 minutes of the programme, don't hesitate to text us in. As Ursula just texted in there, yep, yippee, she got through and she's delighted. Ursula's always banging us in an old text or two, and it's always great to get them, and we're only too happy to play the requests and dedications here. So the text number is 087 69 44 500, or indeed the phone number is 867 1190 for your requests, dedications. And not only that, if you have any events are happening in the community, it might be an nativity play, it might be a panto, it might be a carol singing service or something, let us know. We're only too happy to give you a shout out and promote them, because that's what we're here for, to promote community events and community organisations and everything else. Okay, we're going to crack on with some more Christmas songs. I'm going to go back to the official. Well, this was out at Christmas. It's not what you'd probably term as a Christmas song. It's David Essex and A Winter's Tale.
The nights are colder now. Maybe I should close the door. And anyway, the snow has covered all your footsteps, and I can follow you no more. The fire still burns at night. My memories are warm and clear, but everybody knows to be alone at this time of year. It was only a winter's day, just another winter's day. And why should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? A love that can never just another winter's tale. While I stand alone, a bell is ringing far away. I wonder if you hear, if you're listening, I wonder where you are today. Good luck, I wish you well, for all that wishes may be worth. I hope that love and strength are with you for the length of your time on earth. It was only a winter's day, just another winter's day. And why should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? It's a love that can never be. Oh, it meant a lot to you and scale. We're just another winter's tale.
Just another winter's tale. And why should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? It's a love that can just another winter's day.
Go, brilliant Christmas number one from back in the day. That was requested by me own mucker here, Brennan. Do you like that one, Brennan?
Fantastic song.
Yeah, Christmas 1983.
One of my favourites.
I was only a wee chiseler.
I wasn't even born then.
Oh, be the holy God, you make me feel old now. It was, what was he? 1983 would have been 15 years of age. Oh my God, of a son who's older than that now. Crazy stuff. But yeah, I remember when that song, it was so unique because it was the a cappella, yeah. And it was so different. But well, I suppose we don't have the Top of the Pops things and all. I mean, one of the staples at home during Christmas was the old Christmas Top of the Pops. You had to be sitting down for the old Christmas Top of the Pops. You know, you had the old Top of the Pops. Then you had the Queen, even though she's not our Queen. You just kind of had to listen to the Queen before the big film came on. And somewhere in all that, you'd be sitting having your old dinner. Just kind of eating the dinner because your mum made you eat the dinner before she let you have a selection box.
Good times, eh?
Good times indeed. Good times indeed. But the old Christmas songs as such, they don't seem to, you know, and maybe it's just kind of, you know, reminiscing and that kind of... memories of the past, and it takes you back to your childhood. Definitely. So maybe that's what makes it kind of a little bit specially feeling. But yep, Christmas 1983, I remember it well. I'll tell you what I got. I even know what I got for one of the Christmas presents that Christmas. I'll tell you, I got the original, now that's what I call music album. The very first one was out Christmas 1983. The original, now that's what I call music album, came out that year, and I got it for Christmas. I remember it well.
Very nice.
And I still have it at home on vinyl. Actually, I don't have it. My brother has it. He keeps maintaining it's his. It's not his, it's mine. If you're listening, it's mine. Christmas 1983. Wow, good times. All right, little bit more music now. We'll have a little bit of Johnny Mathis.
Seas. The winds of change whisper in the trees, and the walls of doubt crumble, tossed and torn. This comes to pass when a child is born. A rosy hue settles all around. You've got the feel, you're on solid ground. For a spell or two, no one seems forlorn. This comes to pass when a child is born. And all of this happens because the world is waiting, waiting for one child. Black, white, yellow, no one knows. But a child that will grow up and turn tears to laughter, hate to love, war to peace, and everyone to everyone's neighbor. And misery and suffering will be words to be forgotten forever. It's all a dream and illusion now. It must come true sometime soon, somehow. All across the land dawns a brand new morn. This comes to pass when a child is born.
Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shame. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time.
Well, there you go, folks. Time has caught up with us again. It's come to the end of another lunchtime, another Northside Today. Coming up after the break is lunchtime with Selene. I just have time to quickly thank my guests, Dermot Kirwan, the spokesperson for Friends of the Elderly, Rachel Wright from the Samaritans, and Councillor Keane O'Callaghan from Fingal County Council for telling us all about what's happening with regard to the incinerator and everything else. Okay, as I say, coming up after me is lunchtime with Selene. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow at 1 o'clock with Debbie.
This is 90.3 Near FM.
Hello, this is John Markey. Sunday mornings were always a relaxing time. Time to gather your thoughts and lose yourself in good music. So I invite you to join me on Sunday mornings between 10 and 12 for some magic moments.
Megan Campbell connected with the header and Monica McGuire got to go a full length to push that one away. And here's Rebecca Cray, who'll look to send in the resulting corner kick. Rahini chasing this game down. It's another good ball. And there's the header. It's there! Rahini have equalised! It's Megan Campbell and there's fury in the Piemont defence!
Tune in to Near FM this December for a fascinating insight into the histories of three of Northside Dublin's most iconic football clubs. Join Dave Hooper as he meets the players, coaches, chairpersons, PROs, parents, and some famous ex-players of Rahini United, St. Kevin's Boys, and Sheriff YC. Tune in to Near FM on Tuesday, December 2nd, 9th, and 16th at 6:30 p.m. as part of our weekly sports programme.
Member First Credit Union.
Your local credit union serving the community for over 50 years.
Flexible opening hours.